What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday. To all of the millions of fans of Mudball Monday. Mudball Monday. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Mudball Monday. Hey, yo.
Here we are. We're back. Mudball Monday. We are back for a special Mudball Monday.
Mudball Monday once again.
Happy Mudball Monday.
Mudball Monday, baby. Hello, friends. Welcome back to another week of Mudball Monday. My name is Walker Simas, and I'm joined by Mr. Henry Shimp. How you feeling?
Fantastic. I'm really loving. I know it's hard on the listeners. I know it's really, really hard on the listeners, but I'm loving the kind of two out of three sort of Mudball Monday cadence that we have going right now, because when we take a week off, dude, I miss it. I mean, shit, it's been a while since we've been on the ones and twos here. And I didn't realize how much I'd miss Mudball Monday until you don't have it. So, man, I'm fired up to be here.
Good. I'd like to take a second to affirm Henry's been pulling the weight here in March. He's done episodes with Tron Carter, Chris Mello, John Peterson, and most recently a solo run in history with Henry about the lost George Thomas and Billy Bell courses of L.A. If you've missed any of those, be sure to take some time and get one of those in. We have a neat topic this week, but before we discuss any topic on Mudball Monday, we talk dirt. Henry, what are you drinking, eating, reading, and thinking this week?
Well, as you mentioned, Chris Mello, I am currently drinking Good Walk. I am drinking their Center Cut Costa Rican Medium Blend, which I have been loving. I've also been sipping on the Goats in Glory Ethiopian Light Roast, which is just fantastic. And this will play into my reading, but I'll get there in a moment. Man, Ethiopian coffee is good. So I've been enjoying a lot of Good Walk and some electrolytes, which I think you'll have a little bit more to say about in a moment. But yeah, it's been coffee, water, a little bit of electrolytes, and standard operating procedure, as one may say, eating. Before we hit record, we were talking about it briefly. We've got, you know, family coming out this week, got our home tournament. So going to be a lot of good eating. Got all sorts of dinners lined up. You know, lunches will just be kind of golf stuff. But looking forward to that, but also had a great week before, just kind of keeping it down the middle, you know, every meal in on the breakfast burrito grind. Once again, when I make them well, I mean, I can do it every day, literally lunch every day. This past week had been, I switched it up yesterday because I had kind of a clean out meal of sorts for lunch. But every day was an apple, an avocado, and a breakfast burrito. I go a little chorizo, wild boar chorizo with eggs, cheese, and a lot of Crystal. I'll give a shout out to Crystal Hot Sauce, which you've done on the story before. So man, you make them on a Sunday. And I swear to you, like the one I have on Friday or Saturday is the best one of the week. It tightens up. It's just anyone that's looking for a meal prep situation, go for breakfast burritos, make five or six of them, eat them throughout the week. You know, you just warm them up in the microwave or you can toss them on the griddle, whatever it is. It's a great way to increase the quality of your dirt for the week in the E category. Reading, alluded to it just briefly. This might just sound like too much for my vibe, but you know, I'm going to say it anyway. Uncommon Grounds, A History of Coffee. It's like a 600 page history of just everything that's gone on with coffee. And I do want to share a little story from my reading this week. Once again, this is going to just feel like too much, but you know, we're already too far down the line. I have finally figured out what I'm going to name my first dog. I've been thinking about this for a long time. I'm a dog guy. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be 3 years or 7 years, but it won't be too long before I have a dog. As soon as I have enough space, there's going to be a nice Labrador or Spaniel or something of the like that will be my companion. Hopefully a second of which. And anyway, I figured out what I'm going to name it. So very early in this book, there was a story about what is known to be the earliest origins of coffee in Ethiopia. A goat farmer is traversing a hillside with one of his famous goats by the name of Caldy. Caldy kind of takes a little joyride and goes off to figure out something else. And all of a sudden, the farmer goes and finds Caldy back in these woods dancing, a dancing goat. And what's happened is he's eaten coffee beans. And so Caldy is the discoverer of Ethiopian coffee and coffee for all of us. And it will be the name of my first dog. So when we're on episode 700 and Joe Rogan is a thing of the past, people can hold me to that. So reading Uncommon Grounds, Caldy, first name of my dog. I am an idiot. Thinking, I don't know what I'm thinking after that dirt. So at least the dirt section of it. So I truly don't know what I'm thinking. I'm thinking maybe it's time for you to get to your dirt.
Yeah, I feel like it's been 3 weeks with, this is going to be funny, low T on dirt, but no, that quality was awesome. It's really good.
Now we just have to figure out what dog I get, because yeah, Caldy is hay in the barn.
Yeah, no, that I cannot wait for those days. Drinking. Man, I love coffee in the mornings. This is a great moment here because we got three hour time change and I just got back from a run and I'm sitting here drinking coffee and we flipped on the Zoom and we're both here in hoodies drinking coffee. It just couldn't be any better. But when I wake up, hydration, it's the first thing that I do. It's the first thing that I do right out of bed. And our loyal Mudball Monday listeners will know that. I think it's important to know why we do that, though. We give ourselves away for a large portion of our day. I'm a big believer in all the inputs that are required to give my best every day to people who depend on my efforts, or as we talk about often, just so that we can be ready for that one-off moment that really matters. So what are the inputs? Hydration, movement, nutrition, mental health, recovery, rest. These are things I think about every day. And we've finally found a brand that aligns with that. We've been using Element Electrolytes as part of our daily cycle. That's L-M-N-T. I've tried now like half a dozen electrolyte brands, some good, some not so good. And Element products are designed to work for you, not against you. It's 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium, zero sugar, zero gluten, zero artificial ingredients, and no fillers. So this week, the best Mudball Monday idea will win a shipment of Element products, and we will collaborate with you to develop a Mudball Monday on the winning topic. So get swinging in the DMs, baby. Eating heavy on fruits this week: papaya, avocado, pineapple, pears, blueberries. And you'll always find dried cherries in my granola blend in the mornings. We were talking about this week. You're a soft oats guy. I have nothing against soft oats. I just never find myself doing it. I got to do more of that. I really do.
So are you cold and more firm?
More of like cereal style. So cold.
Huh. Interesting. I mean, there's a place in the world for overnight oats, but... Yeah, I was on the story yesterday. Might come back today. It's every day. It's truly every single day. I hit the same bowl of oats. I have the recipe down. It's hardly a recipe, but the preparation down to a science. Warm, soft oats. Man, it's good. Anyway, yeah, back to the dirt.
It's really solid. And pairing it with fruit is just next level. Like that with some blueberries. You just can't lose.
Sorry to cut in again, but the winning combo, and this is going to sound crazy, but maybe this will get you on the warm oats game. Warm oats, frozen fruit. It sounds crazy, but it does kind of melt a little bit, but it's going to maintain its temperature. It's going to be pretty cold throughout the entire course of eating it. So get yourself some oats, warm, frozen fruit, a little bit of PB or almond butter, something like that. And you're going to be dancing like Caldy.
That reminds me of something else. You know, the thing that really drives me crazy in different granolas is whole almonds. I feel like it's a filler product, takes up a lot of space. Nobody wants to eat a whole almond. Nobody. It's a nuisance. And I definitely take care of my nut butters. So that's been driving me crazy recently. Also, as stated in the end of year pod, I've been doing a lot of running, particularly this week. So last night I picked up a really nice ribeye, coffee chili rub, cast iron, reverse sear. I'll make sure to throw a picture in the story this morning. Reading this week, I ended my three book saga, thank goodness. And I'm returning solely to Troublemakers. I will regurgitate a quote this week from the book that I've been reading, Dottie Pepper's book, Letters to a Future Champion. This quote is from Bobby Jones. I found it applicable. The aim of life should be the perfection of personality or character. Sufferings, joys, and achievements mean nothing except as they influence the development of this personality or character, which will lead me straight into my thinking. We talked about this this week, Henry. The shit you do for you is not just for you. Every mile you run, page you read, hour of quality sleep you get, nutrients you put in your body, these inputs, while they feed you, they change the way you treat the stranger you meet, the way you take on challenges, the way you think about opportunities. I've seen the difference in myself. It takes one to know one. I felt myself operate through life with bad inputs, and it wasn't just me that I was hurting by doing that. And we seem to always go back to one of the first guests on the tie, which I love. But as Johnny said, it starts with a choice. The choice leads to behaviors. The behaviors become habits, and the habits make us who we are. So enough dirt. Let's get to the mud. Today, we're talking about two of our own match formats. These are for the people. It's getting warmer outside. People are going to be playing some matches. Henry, you're on record saying that sometimes you just enjoy experiencing a place far more than getting deep into some sort of match. But when the time comes, what are you looking for?
You know, I'm not about a passive match, and that's my issue with matches. How do I situate this? I don't care that much about like just playing, and this is a me problem. This is a me thing, but just like playing for $10, like, oh yeah, let's just, because we're teeing it up, like let's play for $10 or whatever. It just doesn't do much for me. I don't really care that much. And so I am more of a proponent of quality over quantity. If I play golf five times, I'd like for, you know, four of them to just kind of enjoy the ride, see the holes, all the rest, enjoy the company. And one of them, it's time for a good game with a good group, and let's get the F after it, essentially. So for me, when it comes to matches, I'm all about, like, you need four people, or three, four people. I'll give a shout out to the three-man game, to be all in and just get after it. But I'm not a big proponent of, let's just do some sort of little match every single time we peg it. You know, if you need a match to, it's like, if you need alcohol to have a good time, then you need to think about that. If you need a match to enjoy a round of golf, you need to think about that. Maybe that should have been my thinking. I digress.
That's a fantastic point. Fantastic. Let's hear your game, your setup. What you got?
Here we go. So, this is one I'm really, really excited to talk about this. I played this match a lot growing up in high school with the boys that we played with in high school out at Charlotte CC. We were always stuck in between. Do we go four ball or do we go aggregate? Aggregate seems a little bit harsh, and four ball seems, it can be tough at times, right? To situate the right four ball match. Like if you just don't have sort of the same quality of player throughout, someone gets tagged with the worst player, someone's a little bit better than the others, and it can just be hard to make it equal. So of course we just split the middle. Shout out Daniel Berger, Victor Hovland, and Joel Damon. Split the middle, baby. So what we decided was, rather than in a four ball setup, you have two players, and in a stretch of two holes, obviously those two players are going to cumulatively make four scores, and you take two of them, the best on each hole. If you do aggregate in that stretch of two holes, you take all four scores. In this game, which we have called half aggregate or better aggregate, kind of a split between better ball and aggregate, but also the better version of aggregate, you take three out of four scores. But where it gets exciting is on the first hole of each two-hole stretch, you have to declare whether or not you're going to take one or two scores. So think about this. You and I are on a team. We're playing a match. And on the first hole, we make a par and a bogey. We have to sit there and think about, do we take the par and the bogey, or do we just take the par? You got to think about, what is the second hole? You know, if it's a really hard one, if it's a 500-yard par four, we may say, odds aren't really that high necessarily that we're going to make two pars. Someone could make a bogey. Someone could make worse. Like, let's go ahead and take the par and the bogey. Similarly, if it's an easier hole, I'd like to think that we're confident enough to say that, oh no, the second hole is pretty easy. Like, we'll make two pars. Hopefully we even make a birdie or two. So we're going to just take the par, but you can't go back on it. So if we say, we're going to just take the par, and all of a sudden on the second hole, we make two bogeys, it just is what it is. So half aggregate, better aggregate, three scores in two holes between two players. You got to decide on that first hole if you're going to take one or two scores, and then that's what you got. It's a fun one. It gets spicy. And usually there is there's an optional rule that there's a local adoption to the rules that the 18th hole is always aggregate. So even if you take two scores on 17, you always take them both on 18. Kind of a fun way to do it. But, you know, it's a nice way to have a little bit of leeway, but not quite as much as better ball, where someone can just kind of carry the match. You know, that's something that's my issue with it, is like, you get through 15 holes sometimes and you realize that you've only contributed on one hole. And you're like, I'm just out here screwing around, like riding the coattail of my partner, and I'm about to make $20 and I didn't do a thing. Or it can go the other way around. Aggregate, you can feel terrible about it, or you can be really frustrated because you go shoot 66 and your partner shoots 78 and you lose $30, and that's frustrating. When you do better aggregate, kind of fall somewhere in between. So I would encourage everyone in a four ball format to give it a run. It's a fun way to do it.
That's awesome. Four player games are great. And I'm going to mention a three player game today.
There are three player games out there that are any good. So I'm glad that you chose this route.
Yeah. We were talking about, well, 9 point, you know, 9 point is probably the best three player game that
nine
I know.
9 point's good.
Yeah. But I love, you know, match play, I think, is widely regarded as the best format in golf, and the best is subjective, certainly. But I like aggregate. I like stroke play. I like what it does to you. I like no gimmies. I like adding up the tally and just being accountable for all the mistakes. And I wanted to find a game that did both of those. So we've come up with a little three-player game here. It's called Match Pot. Here it is. The buy-in.
Pause you real quick. Did you just create this on the fly? Okay.
Yes.
Love it.
Yeah, yesterday. And this is a base of a lot of matches. So I hope this ends up working out pretty good. But try it out. Let us know how it is. I hope that we can do this with a third sometime soon. Buy-in. Each player puts up $2 a hole, $1 goes to the match. $1 goes to the pot. Real creative name. Thank you very much. Flip a tee on the first hole to delegate holes of ownership. There are three players, 18 holes. The whole idea is that each player will get to own six holes. The same rules can be applied to any number of holes in multiples of three. So the first person who the tee flips to will get holes 1, 4, 7, 10, 13, 16. The second chosen, 2, 5, 8, 11, 14, 17, and so on. The current hole owner, if one of your holes falls on the holes that you were delegated on the first tee, you were a current hole owner. That hole owner is locked into a match, a one-on-one match play situation. On the given hole, there are two remaining players. One must choose to play in the match. One must sit. You all must be thinking, one must sit. Yes. Each player will have six holes in which they sit out of the current match. Each match, the two players will play for $3 a hole. I said before, each player puts up $2 a hole. $1 goes to the match. $1 goes to the pot. There are three players. Every time there is a match on a given hole, they are playing for $3 a hole. Now, there's another side of this, but I'll get into that in a minute. If the hole is tied, if the match, the singular match is tied, all $3 go into the pot. Well, what is the pot? Since every player sends $1 to the match and $1 to the pot starts at $54 and rises by $3 every time the match is halved. And I like this format because if you want to guarantee some cash, if you want to guarantee that you make some money or at least keep some of your money, you can just go out and win your matches. You're responsible for those. But the pot is your aggregate total of your sitting holes. So the total relative to par of your six hole sitting, that's what you're playing for in the pot. So you would think that in a game of matches that you would feel like the one who is left out by sitting, but really you're playing for the bigger pool of cash and everyone will have their turn to do so. And it's kind of like this internal battle. These two guys are focused on their matches and you're kind of doing your thing, tallying up that total, and you're playing for a $54 starting pot that rises by $3 every time that those guys tie the match or tie the hole. So it's really a cool game. And who knows? I mean, the pot could end up being massive. And if you want to get some guaranteed cash, win your matches. So match pot.
Good shit. Big fan. Let me ask you this. Good stuff. So this topic, this MBM topic, was a user submission by our guy, Dave. How did you go about selecting this one as we're going to be selecting an MBM topic from our Element giveaway this coming week?
How do you mean? I don't think I understood you.
How'd you go about selecting the MBM topic? Like we get a lot of submissions, you know, we get a lot of people hitting us in the DMs and what were the considerations of, hey, let's talk about match formats versus any other myriad of things. Like what made you think this would be fun to talk about on MBM? Did you think, you know, there aren't enough good matches out there, and so like, let's help people out. Or was it one that you just kind of wanted to tackle because it seemed somewhat interesting?
No, the snow's melting for a lot of our listeners. And
there you go.
I'm watching people crawl out of their houses and people are dying to go play golf. And I played last weekend with a friend of the podcast and a few other guys who were just really active in the golf space. And it was fun, man. And we didn't play match, but we certainly talked about it. And it was just, I know that is happening everywhere. And it's just I think Mudball Monday topics can be kind of hard sometimes because I think we can sound repetitive if we're not careful about certain things. But that is something that everybody's heading that direction. Everybody's going to be out in the golf course. Everybody's going to be playing. And I want people to feel a reason to get involved with what we're doing. And so give some of these matches a try. And I look forward to playing some of my own once I get out there. So I look forward to playing some golf with you, Henry. It's been way too long.
A hot minute. You know, I've been thinking about it. We got to figure out some sort of situation for the year, whether it's you hopping on a loop somewhere or I don't know. We'll figure out how to get something going here pretty soon because
I would gladly hop on a loop.
Tie off site 2.0. is in the works. And we were talking last night about what 3.0 might look like. 3.0 could get rather hot and bothered. But 2.0 is going to be good. Probably keep it domestic, but little teaser for 3.0. So before we go away from matches, I do want to ask you, because you alluded to the fact that I have been on record to say I'm not the biggest match guy, at least not every time out. That's something that we don't always necessarily disagree on. I feel like every time we play, we're like walking down the first hole and you're like, you kind of ask me like, match today, knowing that I'm probably not going to want to do a match. So talk to me about how you think about matches. Are you a little bit more of a, hey, I want to do it every time out? And more importantly than where you sit, like, why necessarily is that the case? Why do you enjoy doing a match virtually every time you play? And, you know, do you think that a round is just a little bit less enjoyable or harder to focus or whatever it may be in the absence of some sort of competition?
Yeah, I would say that if you asked either my college buddies or my college teammates or anybody in that realm, they would say that I'm not the one to initiate any sort of match or anything like that. I think I'm certainly on the side of wanting to just enjoy a round or just practice or be where I am or work on something. But I do really enjoy a match. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because there was a stretch time where we just played so seldom that it's kind of fun to get a match going. But yeah, man, I love a match as much as the next guy. I think it's a great way to move throughout the golf course and just foster some competition and stay engaged. And like you, I feel you nailed it there, because there's nothing worse than a match that's not engaging or that somebody gives up on. I mean, there's just nothing less fun than that. So I've heard about a number of games that I'd never played. I personally don't like Wolf.
I almost threw an F-bomb behind it to show my vigor on this one. What I hate is freaking Hammer. Oh yeah. My God. That game sucks.
It's funny you said that.
Come at me. I'm ready for people to come at me in the DMs because I know a lot of people love Hammer. And I'll back off just a little bit to say that if people enjoy Hammer and that's what gets them excited to go play golf, then by God, go play Hammer until you die. But for me, never ask me to play Hammer ever.
Yeah. And to each their own, like everybody's got their stuff. And if we don't like your stuff, then don't let it deter you. There's some stuff that I don't really like in the match realm. I want equity in my match. Like if I'm going to be in, especially for a dollar amount, I want to know that I can play my way out of that, you know? And if I'm in a match that sets me up to where it's just going to be really, I'm going to have to lean on my partner too much or whatever. We've all been on the right and wrong side of that, I think. But I'm not a fan. So, and then with golf courses, I don't love matches at great golf courses. I just don't. I have played very few matches on golf courses that I just want to observe. And I think something I probably need to do more is not play some of the golf courses that I want to go see for the first time. Is just go there and look at it and walk it and observe it. And then play it later if I want. But that's something I haven't really done enough of yet. So
I want to ask you one question. I've got kind of a quick hitters that I think I want us to do after we finish this one. But so knocked out two, say knocked out. I don't like acting as if I was like ticking them off. I loved both of them truly. But did two interviews yesterday that are going to be fun to bring to people. We've got our Masters content dialed. So those of you that are excited about the Masters, and if that's not everybody, then what are you doing?
Get out.
Our Masters content is going to be pretty spicy. So got some exciting stuff coming. And anyway, a question that I was going to ask to the second guest that I had yesterday, but did not end up asking. We spoke about competing on really good golf courses, you know, playing actual proper competition in tournaments. And something that I was going to ask him, but never ended up making it to, the conversation just didn't necessarily go there. But talk to me about what it's like to compete somewhere really good, whether it's for the first time or you could have played there multiple times before. So the easiest example for us is probably Pinehurst number two, because we've both played it a good bit. We've competed on it and we've also played it casually. What does it feel like to you after you've competed on a golf course to go back there and play it casually? Is it, you know, just a little bit drier when you've been, you know, because you're in the heat of the battle when you're out there at a tournament, right? And you've probably seen it under the toughest conditions. Is it like a walk in the park? Is it just like a ride down memory lane, good, bad, or otherwise? That's just like so much easier the next time you're there for a casual round? Or is it just bland? And you're like, you know, I'm just not feeling anything today and it's not quite doing it for me.
Yeah. You mentioned Pinehurst number two, and I haven't competed on Royal Melbourne, but you play the Master of the Ames there, and I've walked that golf course and observed the Master of the Ames being played. So I feel like we can share that one as well. Both played Pinehurst number two in competition. I think you've played number two under a little bit spicier condition than I've played in competition, but nevertheless, like number two is spicy in general. Yeah, man. This answer may be an indication of the hump that I never got over in competition. But the difference to me between being under the gun and playing a really good golf course while not being under the gun, it's so night and day. It's unbelievable. The short little shots around those greens. Not as much the tee shots or seconds, like those things are pretty well automated, but particularly around the greens is just, I would say in competition, the advantage that you have is that you're so locked in. You are completely focused on what you're doing. And I think when you're not in competition, there's just a little more leeway there. But when you're playing recreationally, I just think the lens is way wider. You're able to experience what is happening much more. When you're competing, it's like, I mean, you're shooting down a barrel. Just there's nothing else there that can occupy your mind because you're just focused on one thing. So that's my answer. In terms of competing, would you rather, I don't want to ask, would you rather compete on a golf course that you're not as interested in architecturally, that you felt was a really good test of competition? We've talked about those courses before. That's like, they may not fire you up architecturally, but they are a really great test of who the best player is. Or would you rather just play a course that inspires you?
I'd give it a firm yes on the former, that I want it to be a good competition course for two reasons. One, for that very reason, like you want a course to test you at the highest level and more importantly, test everyone in the field kind of on the right metrics of who's the best player, somewhere that's really going to identify that, whether or not it's the greatest architectural piece ever. You want to walk off a course saying like, man, I was tested and I either passed or failed that test. And if I was able to play well, then it's really rewarding because I know I played a good round today and I'm probably going to create some separation from other players versus like, yeah, I played well, but that course just doesn't test people that well. And so someone else probably drove it half decent and just was able to putt their way around or whatever it is. And it didn't really create any sort of alpha between good and bad players. So that's one. Two, I would say, is that not every great course, great quote unquote architectural piece works that well for competition. So I'm not going to name any names necessarily, but there are definitely some great courses that I've played where when you put it under the gun, all of a sudden you become more sensitive to certain things. So, you know, say for example, a course just has like crazy greens, you know, and maybe you have like tons of putts inside 10 feet that just have a ton of break. that's okay. But to me, sometimes that maybe would mean that course isn't quite as well suited for competition. And, you know, I know someone's going to immediately be like, well, what about like Augusta? They have parts of those greens where you can have like flattish putts, right? Like, yes, if you're 30 feet from the hole, you're going to have some putts that break 12 feet. But something that ZB has told me before is like, rarely on tour are you going to have a 7 or 8 footer that is much outside the hole. I know you're going to have some, especially at a place like Augusta, but it's almost like courses need to be tournament spec'd to some degree. And there are a lot of great golf courses that aren't tournament spec'd. Palmetto, for example, I guess there is an actual term of USGA specking greens to where you have spots on them where it's flat enough and putts aren't going to break like 15 feet. All of a sudden, if you go play a course and the greens get pretty fast and it hasn't really been spec'd out properly, it could kind of taint your view of it. And so I just think that courses need to be properly aligned in your mind of, is this meant to be like a competitive course or is it not necessarily meant to be that? You know, think about if the PGA Tour or the USGA or whatever went to, you know, a National Golf Links and tried to stage a US Open and keep the winning score in the single digits under par. Like it would get so silly. They would have to do things that are so ridiculous. And maybe, you know, you could say it's just distance, it's just this, it's just that, but they would have to get so crazy with certain golf courses to make them work for competition, which to me says like maybe a course just isn't necessarily meant for that. So to me, I would rather for, you know, high level competition, yeah, there are plenty of courses that can do both. And those are the best ones. You know, a place like a Riviera is one that comes to mind. I was just down there. And so it's kind of top of mind. Like that's a course that it's an awesome architectural piece. And it's also amazing to compete on and watch guys compete on. But you have a lot of courses where maybe it's just meant kind of to go enjoy the day. And then you have other courses where Quail Hollow, for example, like, is that my favorite architectural course ever? By no means, but we talked about this on House 30 Thursday. Like it is a strong competition course. Like if you're trying to go test high level competitive players, send them to Quail. You're going to identify a nice winner. So yeah, that's what I got.
I want to bring up something else before we clean this up.
I got 3 questions for you at the end though.
Shoot. I mean, this is going to be a long Mudball Monday, but I'm here for it.
You go first, but we got a few quick hitters that I don't want you to forget about.
Right on. Brian Schneider, I was on Twitter a couple weeks ago and a Hoopy Match Club got brought up. Certainly a lot of people know about Hoopy Match Club. It was built for match play. Match play is all that's played there. And the question that Brian raised was, why design a golf course for match play? Aren't all the great golf courses great for match play? And it brought up a really interesting discussion between a number of people, but I'd ask you to look at some of your favorite golf courses, maybe the top 10 in your mind, and ask yourself if there are great match play courses and why. You know, like if you design a golf course specifically with match play in mind, I feel like you kind of lose potentially that stroke play element, large hazards and stuff like that. And a Hoopy is what it is. And it's fantastic from what I hear. But I started thinking last week about, okay, what are the golf courses that I really, really enjoy? What are some great architectural pieces? And then thinking about them on a match play scale, even courses that initially I thought wouldn't be that. Like Myopia Hunt Club, maybe a good example of that. Short golf course, may not be the greatest match play course in the world. And you look at it on aerial and talk to a few people who played it and you're like, oh, wow, this actually could be fantastic. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would. Sorry, thinking.
No, thinking's good.
I would tend to agree that no, I'm going to disagree. Actually, I think that courses can break either way. I think it can go either way. I think they're good courses where, you know, it's going to test you to be able to put together a score, because I think that is a certain skill in golf, the ability to just scratch out a score on every single hole, have to make every putt and, you know, finish 18 and sign for something. And then there are certain courses where you're meant to be a little bit more aggressive on certain shots, and maybe it is just better for match play. But I do think that, that courses can kind of break either way. I love the Ahupi model of, you know, having a lot of half pars and things. Yeah, my thoughts aren't great on it. So I'm going to kind of just glaze over it, but I'm going to say that I think it can kind of break either way. I think that there's some courses that are really great for stroke play purposes and some that are really great for match play purposes. And just because a course is really good for stroke play, to kind of push back on Brian a little bit, if it's not so great for match play, I don't think that that's like a failure in it. You know, it just, not every course, not everything can be a jack of all trades.
Those are good thoughts.
So let's wrap it up here. I got three more questions for you. Kind of random, just came up with this on the fly. But I think it'll be interesting for all the millions of listeners of Mudball Monday. So
billions,
maybe we might be hitting the big B, but, anyway, so I'm going to hit them all. I'm going to hit all three of them for you right here. It'll be easy enough to remember. So three things. First, what is one thing as of late over the last week, 2 weeks that you've cooked that's been really good? Maybe, you know, without going too deep, because we can get in the weeds on the cooking, but, you know, something you might recommend for people to give a go. Two, who is someone who is someone on Instagram that you've been following and like really watching closely recently that you've been enjoying? Doesn't have to necessarily be a recommendation to people, but what's a page on Instagram that you've been giving a lot of time to? And three, what is a golf course, whether it's upcoming, whether it's somewhere you haven't played, whether it's somewhere you have played, that you've really had your mind around as of late?
All right. Well, Dish, I'm doubly going to post this in our story, I guess on Monday. And I cooked this ribeye it was the other night, and I sent you a picture. We were talking about it. Cast iron reverse sear, coffee rub. So we take spent coffee grounds, mix them with like dried chili rub, sesame seeds, brown sugar, a few other things, and put that in a little container. I picked them up on Friday just because I finished my run and I was like, man, not every week I feel like I earn something like that, but I earned it last week. And I picked it up. I brought it home. It never hit the fridge. I mean, it was like straight to the prepping plate. I let it sit out at room temp for probably an hour, and sear on all the edges, threw it in the oven at 350 for a couple minutes, rest. And then I served it. Like, I guess the big thing that I'm getting here, because you mentioned how should people use this to like cook something for themselves, is like cook a nice quality piece of meat with no added fat. Let the fat render and then cook whatever vegetable you want. And that fat zero, again, like I've been big on zero waste, and that includes your fat. Like, don't waste your fat. So I cooked broccolini in the ribeye fat, and it was a very simple 3-part dish, like broccolini, heavy, heavy char. Like, I got that thing ripping hot, heavy char. And then let your ribeye sit, slice it however you please, and then some pickled red onion. Like, super simple dish. All in all, it was like, you know, less than $40, which is probably half of what you would get in a restaurant. And
a David Simas on that one.
Yeah.
Shout out David Simas.
Love you, Dad. And so yeah, it was just really, really quality. And this may sound braggadocious, but you know, I was sitting there like eating that thing, and I was just like, why do I eat out other than the experience? You know, there's just no reason. What account have I been following on Instagram? I still I told you this, and I still believe it. Quinn Thompson is just one of the best followers on Instagram I've ever followed. I mean, he was posting some of the stuff this week. He went over to the UK and did some work kind of in the Heathland golf courses, and those shapes have finished up. They've done the heather face bunkers all throughout those. It's silly. I mean, it's really, really good. So Quinn Thompson, the way he's able to take ordinary life moments and post them in little blips and add little, you know, cool little captions to them. And I love his page so much. Big fan of Quinn. And we've been continuing to talk post the interview that posted a couple weeks ago. So Quinn Thompson, what was their question again?
Golf course you've been thinking about, whether it's something new or somewhere you haven't played or somewhere you have, just is there a course in particular that you really have been putting a lot of mental energy into?
Southern Hills.
Nice.
Southern Hills.
Place looks sick.
Yeah. Bunkering is ridiculous. Yeah. Southern Hills. That's mine.
Should I do it? Should I give my early PGA prediction?
Yeah, you should.
Here it is. You heard it here first. He's been playing some nice golf. He's under the radar. No disrespect to the guy, because I'm picking him to win a major, but he does kind of seem to be a single major PGA sort of guy. We know the vibes there, but he's an Oklahoma guy. Taylor Gooch.
Wow.
Southern Hills PGA. You heard it here first.
Dude, that is a flaming hot take.
He's in good shape. You can see him lifting up the Havermeyer, you know, handling that thing like a champion. No pun intended. Taylor Gooch, Southern Hills.
Hey, any reminders before we peace out for the upcoming weeks?
No. I think we've kept people long enough. We've got great interview coming on Friday from yourself. We'll have Mudball Monday. The following Monday, just the two of us, we will be back on the ones and twos. And then we're going to hop into our Masters content. We'll have something Friday before the Masters. We'll have something Monday before the Masters. A special guest. You're not going to be here for Mudball Monday, but I brought someone in for a fun one. So it can be everything that you typically would expect there. And Friday of the Masters, we're still in flux. If anyone has requests, recommendations, be it, you know, a tube all between the two of us, an interview, a potential history with Henry, we're here for it. We're taking recommendations on that one. So with that, let's hop off. We've kept people forever. So it's been good.
Mudball Monday. Peace.